Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. How many times, say for 30 years, you greet the deities every morning? 365 days a year. So that's 30 times 365, what, 15, 18, 19, 9, 12,500 and, or what, 13,000 times you greet the deities. And every time, it's wonderful. Isn't it? Krishna's ever fresh. And how many times, of course, I don't know, I don't have a mathematical brain at all. How many times you chant Hare Krishna, just japa? 16 rounds, 108 times, times 16, times 365 days, times, you know, however many years. And how wonderful it is every time. That's one of the qualities of the Hare Krishna mantra, or Krishna, is ever fresh, never stale. It's a wonderful process. All right. Oops. Suraha. Therefore, whether one is a demigod or a demon, a man or a creature other than man, such as a beast or bird, everyone should worship Lord Ramchandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears on this earth just like a human being. There is no need of great austerity or penances to worship the Lord, for he accepts even a small service offered by his devotee. Thus he is satisfied. And as soon as he is satisfied, the devotee is successful. Indeed, Lord Sri Ramchandra brought all the devotees of Ayodhya back to home, back to Godhead, to Vaikuntha. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. By the way, just a little off thing. Of course, in Chaupati, especially, everyone is very eager to hear and try to know, hear stories of Prabhupada. And they want to know Prabhupada, and that's good. But if you really, really want to know Prabhupada, as I've said before, you cannot separate Prabhupada from the Bhaktivedanta purports. This is the essence of Prabhupada. Because, of course, we all have so many stories of intimate, perhaps intimate, little pastimes that we had with Prabhupada. I was especially very fortunate in the last year. I had a lot of association with Prabhupada, but especially in the last year where I was tending his body like a deity, as I've told you, especially here in Bombay at Juhu. He was like it was like doing puja. I would massage him and bathe him. I'd pour the water over his head and rub his body. He wouldn't even, he'd just sit there. I'd rub his, then I would dry him. Then I would dress him. Then I'd walk him to his eating area. And the ladies would bring in the prasad. Then he'd take a snap, as he called it. So I was very fortunate. And in all that time, over the years, actually, since 1969, when I thought about it, I realized that Prabhupada really never told us anything that is not in these purports. Of course, it's nice to have the personal dealings, and these purports are Srila Prabhupada. What did he say? They're the symptoms of his, they're the manifestation of his ecstatic devotional ecstasies. So if you really want to know Srila Prabhupada, and of course in my discussion last year when I was here, because there was that discussion, oh, ISKCON, what will happen with ISKCON? Will it be able to, you know, continue? What about the next generation? They'll lose sight of you know, the goal or what we want to achieve. And if you remember, those of you who were here, I said, never underestimate the power of the Bhaktivedanta purports to transform and inspire devotees. As long as we have the Bhaktivedanta purports, there is no, and we study them intensely, there is no need to worry. Not that we should be frivolous or casual, but there is no need to worry. The Bhaktivedanta purports are here. They are potent as long as we keep printing them, Prabhu, our BBT Australia. Then everything will ultimately be good. I mean, gee, if Prabhupada said that even by having a book on the shelf, even if the person never reads it, the book itself is potent to transform. And Radhanath Swami, this is in relation to, oh, I better read the purport first. I'm talking about the purports and I'm ignoring it. I'm such a wretched person. I love to hear myself talk and I totally forget about Prabhupada. Purport. Lord Sri Ramchandra is so kind and merciful to his devotee that he is very easily satisfied by a little service rendered by anyone, human or not. This is the special advantage of worshiping Lord Ramchandra, and there is the same advantage in worshiping Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Krishna and Lord Ramchandra, in the manner of Kshatriyas, sometimes showed their mercy by killing Asuras. But Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu awarded love of God without difficulty even to the Asuras. All the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but especially Lord Ramchandra, Lord Krishna, and later Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, delivered many of the living entities present before them, indeed, all of them. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is therefore represented in the six-armed form of Sad Bhuj Murti, which is a combination of Lord Ramchandra, Lord Krishna, and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The best purpose of human life can be fulfilled by worshiping the Sad Bhuj Murti, the form of the Lord with six arms, two arms of Ramchandra, two arms of Krishna, and two arms of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Also ever fresh, every time you read the Bhagavatam, and I'm sure you've done this, you finish it, you begin again. You read the Bhagavad Gita. It's that sometimes I've heard people say to me, or I had people say to me, oh yes, I've read the Gita. Devotees, or supposed devotees. I've been there, done that. I've been there, I've done that. I read the Gita, I read the Bhagavatam. What's next? I remember in Calcutta, 1973, I think it was 1973, Prabhupada got a letter from a devotee wanting to know if he could read this book and that book and this book and that book. I said, why do they want to read so many books? I have given everything you need to know in the first canto of the, to go back to Godhead, in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Why they want to read so many books? Everything we need to know. Have we digested the Bhagavatam? That we're off looking for this book and that book and this book. So this devotee said, yes, I've read the Bhagavad Gita. Done. Is that the end of it? No, you read it again. Every time I've been reading it for what, 35, almost 40 years, I always find something new. Geez, why didn't I, did I read that before? I say to myself, did I read that before? I don't remember that. Of course, I don't remember from one word to the next. Feeble-minded. Therefore, for me, everything is especially fresh. It's like Alzheimer's disease. Every time you forget something, it's all, oh gee, you know. So Ramchandra is especially being addressed here, Lord Ramchandra, is so kind and merciful. Isn't that wonderful, that first opening line of the purport? Lord Ramchandra is so kind and merciful. Just on that, to his devotees. And the devotees are so humble, they don't like to accept anything from their Lord. Like this devotee, what was his name again? Amala Bhakta. I said, oh, you suffered so much in prison for Lord Chaitanya saying, it was not so much suffering, so humble. And then, but by his imprisonment, look what he did, this story that Radhanath Maharaj told me, how kind and merciful the Lord is, that the man is in prison. Nancy Reagan, who was the wife of the President of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, our Russian devotees may disagree with that, but, you know, came to Russia and heard the man's wife approached her, told her of the hardships he was enduring, and she spoke to Gorbachev's wife, and she spoke to her husband, and the man was released. A little lesson, always go through the wife. Yes, that is an absolute truth, because we always go to who? Srimati Radharani. So always go, not that, of course, you know, there's, But we always go to Radharani, and Prabhupada said that. Because Krishna, he can be a little tough, you know. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if you go to Srimati Radharani and pray to her, oh, she's very soft-hearted. She says, oh, this nice devotee, Krishna, this nice devotee, you please. So look at the service that Amala Bhakta performed. By his service of being imprisoned, he engaged the most powerful people on the planet. And don't think that that will go unrewarded both to him and to Raisa Gorbachev and to Nancy Reagan. They will all. Of course, his benefit is he will very humbly and quietly go back to Godhead. It's like that. We think external, someone may appear to be a big, big bhakta. Like me. Loud. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. Meanwhile, the quiet, humble devotees are all just, you know, going back to Godhead, going back to Vaikuntha, going back to Goloka. And I'm left here still. Of course, Prabhupada did say, the duck that quacks the loudest gets the cracker. He said that. It was in the park. All the ducks were there. Quack, 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 quack. And so Prabhupada said, the duck that quacks the loudest gets the cracker. So all the devotees started going, quack, 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 quack. So kind and merciful for a devotee, Krishna is kind and merciful. For the asura, he manifests his kindness and mercy by killing them. But for the devotee, he's sweet. And he's easily satisfied by a little service rendered by anyone, human or not. So everyone can be engaged. Everyone. Even of course, with Ramchandra, who we're, the purport is directed towards, is that famous story of Hanuman and the spider. And Hanuman, what is the use of your little grains of sand to build this bridge to Lanka? Out of my way, I'm throwing huge boulders, mountains into the ocean. Spider was little grains of sand. Ramchandra said, no. Everyone is rendering service in their capacity. And Ramchandra accepted it. Equal. Of course, you know, due to our conditioning, sometimes we make different... he's a big devotee, and the others, you know, oh, he's a big devotee, she's a big devotee. All devotees, if you are a devotee, that is, are big. And their bigness is in the heart, the magnanimity of their heart, and their willingness to endure really suffering in order to push on Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement and please Krishna. I mean, you're going to suffer anyway in this world. Everyone is suffering. So if you're going to suffer, then better to suffer for Krishna. Because this world is nothing but a ravage. It's suffering from beginning to end. And it's especially prominent as you get older. Of course, when you're young, you're full of energy and you think you will live forever. And when you're old, you're filled with pain and you want to, but you want to live forever. That's the, despite the pain. I'm very apprehensive about this whole death business. I don't look forward to it. But if we surrender to Ramchandra, to Sadbhuj, then there's no fear. There's no apprehension. But you have to train yourself. People think that we're weird sometimes if you say to them, we are training ourselves to die. They look at you. Well, that's weird. That's morbid. Morbid. Why are you so morbid? Always thinking about death. Life is here to enjoy. I had a friend in Australia, and she had a car accident with her son. Her son was, badly injured, broken back, and hey, he's better now. So I said, yes. I said, just see, like that, death can come. She said, yes. And I said, what have you learned? She said, I've learned that death can come at any moment, so you should enjoy sense gratification at every opportunity. That was her conclusion. That is the mentality of the asuras. We're surrounded. I mean, I hate to take a us and them stance, but we are surrounded by asuras, atheists, people who don't believe in God. Like I have another friend I was discussing. I said, you know, God. She said, oh, I'm ambivalent about it. She said, I'm ambivalent. You know, I'm in the middle of the road. They're in such illusion. Everyone is in such illusion. I'm on the plane yesterday, and we fly from Calcutta to Bombay, and of course the plane is filled with Calcutta babus coming to Bombay early in the morning so they can get here at 9:30 so they can make money. The whole plane was vibrating with lusty men who were planning, machinating different ways they're going to make money here in Bombay. And on the bus, you know, to the terminal, they all talk, Mr. Modi, Mr. this, Mr. that, you know, all talk, how to make money. Old men. There was one man, a babu, you know, he had three teeth missing, but he had his phone, and he was, how to make money, Mr. Modi, Mr. Goenka, this. His teeth are falling out, and he's still determined to make some money. And see how kind Radhanath Maharaj is. If you're a devotee and your teeth are falling out, you come to Chaupati, and they get all fixed up. It's wonderful. Kind and merciful. What a wonderful movement. Really, everything is taken care of by the mercy of the Vaishnav ladies and gentlemen, many of whom we're having the good fortune to associate with in these days. It's just wonderful. So anything we can do, we should do with an air of tolerance. Prabhupada once told me, I am not very tolerant. Of course, he was the most tolerant. I am not very tolerant. He had big ideas, big plans, big preaching mission, and he was very tolerant. His whole life had passed before he was able to fulfill those plans. But he was telling me he was always not very tolerant. And he didn't like to be confined. So Amala Bhakta, was not so bad. Prabhupada didn't like to be confined. So I said to him, 3 years in a jail being confined, that's austere. But the result was the highest people, mundane, material people on the planet were engaged in service. Of course, I don't know what happened to poor old Ronnie Reagan, if he got involved somehow. But anyway, at least his wife and Gorbachev's wife and Gorbachev. So anyone can be engaged in service. That service is determined, how they're engaged is actually determined by Krishna within the heart. But the devotee, their purpose is to make possibilities for people to serve. Moving hither and thither within the camp of the enemy to offer opportunities for someone, even the most unlikely people, to be engaged in service, and that is determined by the sadbhuj dwelling within the heart. He determines. We don't know who is going to be engaged. The most unlikely characters can become devotees, and we have no... It's all determined by the Lord and His devotees. It's like every time I come here to Chaupati and I see my godbrothers, I say to them, how does Radhanath do it? You know, I'm casual like that. Or how does Radhanath Maharaj do it? I say, what? How does he do it? All these wonderful devotees, all these huge preaching programs, really transforming Bombay, the elite, prestigious people of Bombay. How does he do it? I always ask that question. It's bewildering to me because I'm so wretched. But the answer is by being a pure conduit. It's not done by mental prowess or material calculation. It's things are accomplished within our movement by keeping ourselves pure and an open conduit, pipe or tube or connection to Krishna. And how is that done? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. If things have to be done, if we are presented with a job, a task of converting the world, how are we going to do it? How are we going to do it? It's not possible. It is possible, the impossible is possible by the kindness and mercy of the Lord. But we have to keep ourselves open to allowing the Lord to work through us. That is a devotee. You have to keep the channels clear because they get all, you know, static. You know, you turn on the television and the snow. They used to call it snow. Static. All white. Now we want the perfect digital pixel picture. Clearer and clearer and clearer. More and more, the colors are more and more intense. That all comes from chanting Hare Krishna. If you think you can be a devotee, but I'll just kind of, today I'll chant two rounds. That's good. But if you made a promise to chant 16 rounds, then that's not so good. It's good, but it's not so good. But if a mundaner decides to chant one round, that is extraordinary, isn't it? So we have to keep the channel clear by chanting Hare Krishna and studying the Bhaktivedanta purports. I cannot emphasize to you and to myself enough how important they are. All the stories are wonderful. They give us an idea of what a spirit of the stories of Prabhupada and the different devotees' dealings with Prabhupada are wonderful because they give us an idea of what a spiritual personality was like. They're unique. Unique. But this is Prabhupada. Kind, merciful, and heavy. Wasn't he? And that's Krishna. Unique. Extraordinary. Of course, you know, we're so used to now, you know, four arms and Narayan and you know, six arms. But imagine, there's a form, six arms. Don't you find that unique? I mean, imagine if you were walking down the street and someone passed you with six arms. One set golden, one set blue, one set green. I remember when I first went to the temple in January 69 on La Cienega Boulevard in Los Angeles. Anyway, I ended up in Tamal Krishna's little office, and he was telling me, he was reading to me from the Bhagavatam about the creation of the universe. Because I was at that time, I was going to be Otto Preminger's assistant. I was up for that job, the big, big Hollywood director, Otto Preminger, big Academy Award. Yeah. And also I was scouting locations and writing for my own movies, something about spaceships. We were chasing all over because we believed that they were spaceships. So we were way out there. And we thought we were normal. And I thought the devotees, they're a little weird. But I'm chasing around Mexico and the deserts of America looking for spaceships. And I thought the devotees were weird. So Tamal is explaining to me about Mahavishnu and a serpent bed and bubbles coming from his body with universes and... And I thought, yeah, why not? I thought it's as good an answer as any. And it's exotic and unique. So I immediately, all right, I'm staying. I just stayed. Because I thought, well, yeah, this is far out. Why not? Why not a giant Anantasesh bed with a blue man with four arms? Blue. With golden seeds coming from every pore of his body and expanding into universes. Whoa. You know, we sometimes take this knowledge, the Bhaktivedanta purports, too casually. It's mind-boggling. Mind-boggling. Way, way, way. You know, I had this experience. In the morning, I get up, I chant my rounds, and faithfully. I never do anything without chanting my rounds. I'm giving this class. I've only, unfortunately, chanted three rounds. So you have to forgive any, you know, inebrieties in this class, because my mind is blurred. But I walk to get the newspaper. And one day I was walking from the newsagent back to my flat, and I was thinking about Krishna. I was thinking about always, ever, eternality, that Krishna was before the beginning. Krishna was there, always. And it was like, I was stunned. I just stopped. I'm not saying I was an ecstatic symptom, but I was like stunned. I couldn't go on. And all the cars and everyone's going, North Sydney. Everyone going hither and thither in the big Mercedes and the Lexi and the Beamers and all busy. And I was, my God, it's true. And it's way, 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 way beyond any of us to understand. But we can get a glimmer of the truth. Six arms. But it's true. And why not? I have two arms. Why not six? Why can't someone have six arms? There are entities with no arms. There are entities with four legs. I have two legs. A cow has four legs. Why not a God who appears as a boar? Think of it. I mean, what an extraordinary thing. A boar with tusks. And when today's Baraha, Ekadasi, God as a boar who dives down to pick up the planet on his tongue. I mean, this knowledge that Prabhupada has given us is mind-boggling. But what happens is we begin to take it very casually. Today's Baraha Ekadasi, Prabhu. And someone says, "What's God appeared as a pig with big tusks, and he dives down and he picks up the planet and he puts it back in." It's not fantasy; it's true. But it's mind-boggling. And when that, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, oh boy. I am so teeny. The mind can't deal with that because it makes us so insignificant that immediately we click back into our mundane perceptions and conceptions, which places us at the center. That's false ego. And yes, I'm here. And yes, I may die, therefore I should enjoy it every moment before I die. You only live once, people say. Oh, little do they know. You know, the richest man in Australia died a few weeks ago. He owned more land in Australia than any man. And he owned more beef cattle than any man in the world. That's how big he was. He owned more cattle, beef, than any man in the world. And he was playing polo a few years before, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. He was playing polo, and he had a heart attack, and he fell off his horse, and he was clinically dead for 6 minutes. And then they revived him. And then he appeared on television, and they said, what was that like? He said, I got some bad news and some good news. He said, there's no heaven. That's the bad news. He said, the good news is there's no hell either. He said, it's just nothing. That's what it's like to be dead, he said. Just nothing. But we wouldn't like to be Kerry Packer at this moment, not having been the biggest owner of cattle for slaughter in the world. There's so much knowledge of how you see people, how you see the world, how you see the universe, how you see the creation. Everything is coming here in the Bhaktivedanta purports. By the kindness and mercy of Lord Ramchandra and Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore six arms, Sadbhuj. Sadbhuj ki jai. What a wonderful thing. Kindness and mercy. What would the world be like without kindness and mercy? Well, you stop being a devotee and go back out there. You'll find out fast. Because out there, people are not kind. People are not merciful. People are not devotees. People are cruel and merciless. And they live at the expense of the innocent cow. But if you give all that up and try to be a devotee by chanting Hare Krishna, the Lord will benedict you. And the greatest benediction is to be able to have some realization of the Bhaktivedanta purports. Because that will give you the strength. These purports will give you the strength to get through life. I always say, I don't know if it's that easy. I just don't know, you know, this dying stuff. And, you know, if it's that easy, you know, someone's chanting Hare Krishna and I die and go back to Godhead. I don't know. For myself, at least. I don't know if it's that easy. If it was that easy, and if devotional service is an ongoing process from life to life, if it was that easy, then why didn't I go back to Godhead in my last life? You know? You have to really, really be intense. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know if it's that easy. Maybe. Kindness and mercy, unfathomable and causeless. I don't know what the Lord will do. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's going to take all of you back to Godhead and he's going to leave me here to ravage around and, you know, whining and whinging and criticizing, coming in the line of Ramchandra Puri as I do. So this is, at least, it's my realization, how we should approach reading the Bhagavatam and reading the Bhagavad Gita. Don't dismiss the Bhagavad Gita. Ooh, such a wonderful book. I used to drive around before I was a devotee when I was living and driving up and down the coast between L.A. and San Francisco, and I had a Bhagavad Gita on my dashboard. And I'd pick it up and read it. Didn't understand a damn thing. But I think, I'm being very spiritual. I'm reading this Bhagavad Gita, Hindu book. Hindu book. Reading it. Didn't understand a word. And when I stayed in the temple that night, and of course, we didn't have Mangal Aarti at that time. Mangal Aarti wasn't until 1971. Right? Were you? 1971, Prabhupada started. Everyone had to go to a Mangal Aarti. You had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Whoa. Because we all used to get up at 7, 7:30, you know. I remember how Shilavati, she would get up early. I think she would get up at 6. And she would do an arti to the painting of the Panchatattva that we had in the temple room. We didn't have deities so much. We certainly didn't have deity worship like we have today. And that bell, she'd ring the bell. And that would wake us all up in there was a big room. We'd all sleep in a heap. It was sweet times, though. Anyway, what was the purpose of my telling you that story? I forget. Huh? Oh, yeah, yeah. So then, thank you. We get up and everyone would shower and we'd have a kirtan in the temple room, and then we had a Bhagavad Gita, abridged version by Macmillan. It had a blue cover. Did you ever? It didn't have Sanskrit. It didn't have the Sanskrit verses. It didn't have the transliteration or the word for word translation, and it didn't have extensive purports. But the purports that they did print of Prabhupada's in that abridged book, suddenly the Bhagavad Gita made perfect sense. It was easy. Not that it's easy to know Krishna, but it was easy. You could understand it. It's the key. The key to opening the vast treasure house of knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are the Bhaktivedanta purports. Without them, you cannot understand nothing. Isn't it? It's the key. Therefore, Prabhupada did not like us to read literature that did not have purports at all. So to follow up on that story, why they have to read so many, why they want to read so many books. Then he called us in later. He said, I will start on the Chaitanya Charitamrita or Chaitanya Bhagavat. Which should it be? I said, ooh, Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't know why. I didn't know what the Chaitanya Charitamrita was. Prabhupada said, yes, I think so. So he started. But everything we need to know to what? To get out of this world. This stinking, rotten world. Don't think there's anything nice there. There isn't. There's nothing nice. Trust no future, no matter how bright. Bride, the groom, the whole world before them. brahmacharis now. Oh, maybe there's something here in this world. Janani Bas was telling me yesterday that Bhakti Vidyapurna told him that on Brahmalok, the sense gratification is so refined. He said, he gave an example. He said, say you're looking at that beautiful crystal chandelier and you're enjoying it. And then suddenly it will transform into another shape because you've already enjoyed that shape. It will offer you another shape to enjoy. And I said, ooh, I like that idea. I said, all right, Brahmalok, here I come. Don't be like that. Don't be like me. Always looking to enjoy, somehow to wring out a little bit of enjoyment in this world. Or like that woman I know. Yes, we had this accident. Death almost captured us. Therefore, I have learned to enjoy every minute of my life in this world. Study the Bhaktivedanta purports with the proper consciousness, and you will indeed invoke the kindness and mercy of Lord Ramchandra, Lord Sri Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Hare Krishna. Is fasting today, right? Because the Lord appeared as a boar. Any questions? All right. Hare Krishna. Oh, God. They gave you a mic. Would you speak into it, kind?
They were having a press conference.
It's not on. I have old ears, so you have to.
Okay. In 1975, there was a press conference right before the Rath Yatra, and Srila Prabhupada was on the Vyasasan, and there was a lot of news reporters. There was like 10 or 15, and only a few devotees. But I was sitting there, and they started to say, Swami, so when you die, and he interrupted them and he said, I will never die. He said, I will live on in my books. He said, these will be the law books for the next 10,000 years.
Yeah, and you were there.
I was there.
Someone was questioning that.
I know. I don't know who else was there. Does anybody know who else was there? But
doesn't
I was
matter.
There.
You
I
were
heard
there.
It with my own ears. He also, at that time, they asked him why they should have the big carts for Lord Jagannath, and his eyes got really big, and he said, do you think God should ride in a small car? It was wonderful. But many times he told us better than, like in Los Angeles, he would say, better than my own personal association is to read my books.
Yes. That's the most important. Though sometimes I think that I was born on Easter Sunday, 1969, when I was initiated, and I died on November 14th, 1977. I sometimes think that way because I needed that personal association, you know? But anyway, that's 8.5 years or 8.75 years, a little bit more advancement I might have made. So, you know, next life and then the life after that. It's an ongoing process, but it's joyful. Prabhupada once said that. All the devotees were in Israel. He had just arrived at Mayapur, and I came in, and I was all happy he was there, and I fell down, paid my dandabhat, stood up, and Prabhupada said, our Bhavananda is a real Vaishnava. He said, joyful at every moment. Of course, we were only joyful. Prabhupada brought that out of us, that joy, that happiness. And after, you know, Prabhupada passed away, it's just not as much fun. isn't it?
But we're so lucky because he left us so many tapes, so many videos, so many books.
Yeah.
So that's our
You're joyful at every moment. You're always smiling. You're always happy.
Sudama Maharaj called me a week before he died. And he said, I don't know why, Kanka, but I have to talk to you. So we talked a long time about Srila Prabhupada. And he said, Prabhupada's been gone for 17 years. And to me, that sounded so strange because I do concentrate on hearing Prabhupada's lectures every day on tape. And I read and I chant my rounds. So to me, Prabhupada's not gone. He's always with me. So it sounded strange when Sudama Maharaj said he's been gone for 17 years.
You're extraordinary, Kanka.
No, but that's what he
and
gave
a woman.
Us. No, he gave us that, though.
Hare Krishna.
He gave us that.
Yes.
So special. And
that's
so
right.
It's just beyond.
The sound vibration transcends time and space and brings you into direct contact with the Lord and his devotees. And it's this is the sound vibration. Prabhupada said, this is sound vibration because I spoke this into the dictaphone. So it's sound vibration. And then it is transformed into print. But it's actually sound vibration. He said that. Everything is based on sound. Yes, Maharaj.
Thank you for a wonderful class. But I would just like to share one thing that more or less explains and enhances the point you're making about Srila Prabhupada's being in his purports. And it was a personal thing that happened into my life only once, and this is not to make myself sound any special, but it's for a point of edification and to bring out that point. Because I had heard that. The Prabhupada said, when I leave, I'm not God. I'm actually in my books. You read my books and you can associate with me. So one time I was reading Bhagavatam, and I was just reading, and then all of a sudden, while I was reading, I heard Prabhupada's voice speaking the words. And no longer was I reading, but I was hearing Prabhupada, was like a tape, and it went on for some time. And I think Prabhupada wanted to confirm to me that, yes, I'm in my books, yes. Non-different.
Just see, miracles. Yeah. These things happen because our movement is transcendental. So even the most inconceivable things can become real. Yes, he's speaking to us. Yeah, well, what a nice experience that must have been.
Happened once, but it was powerful.
That's all it takes. Once is enough. Don't ask for more. You're lucky. Okay, Hare Krishna.